Welcome everybody to the Ramayan call. Tonight we're going to continue with the hearing the pastimes of Sri Ramachandra and now Sitaram, because Ram just broke Lord Shiva's bow, then got married to Sita. He also defeated Parashuram, strung Lord Vishnu's bow, entered back into the kingdom of Ayodhya, and the evil deed of Mantra, the seed of envy in her heart, is just starting to fructify, because she passed on her envy to Kaikeyi, who's going to ask for the boons promised to her by Dasarath. And that's where we left off last night. And today's chapter we're taking up at number 6, the king's heartbreak. Shraddha, all of a sudden I'm getting some static. Bizarre.
I have muted all the lines. And let me see if I'm producing the static, so I'll join from another phone. I'm on my cell phone.
That's better. It just stopped. Om Agnana Timirandasya Agnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Chapter 6, The King's Heartbreak. Dasarath, having seen that all the arrangements for the installation were underway, made his way toward Kaikeyi's rooms for his evening rendezvous. The glorious monarch entered Kaikeyi's excellent apartment as the moon might enter the sky at night, spreading its beautiful rays. Peacocks, parrots, and other species of colorful birds crowded the palace, their cries augmenting the sounds of various musical instruments. Hundreds of well-dressed maids moved about in the great halls and rooms, in which were hung flowing silk drapes, and numerous fine paintings. Along the outer walls grew trees filled with blossoms and fruits. Tall seats of ivory burnished with gold stood everywhere, along with expansive couches covered with soft cushions. Costly hand-woven carpets covered the floors. First-class food and drink of every variety were provided in gold and crystal dishes laid out on golden tables. Dasarath swept the palace, which rivaled paradise itself. The armed guards at the outer doors bowed low as he passed, while at the inner doors, the female servants folded their palms in respect. Coming at last to Kaikeyi's personal quarters, the king did not see her lying on her bed as expected. Dasarath was surprised to find that his beloved spouse had failed to meet him at the usual time. He called out for her. When there was no reply, the king was dismayed. What had happened? He searched about, and finding Kaikeyi's doorkeeper, inquired of his wife's whereabouts. With a dejected expression, the portress told the king that Kaikeyi had entered the sulking chamber in an angry mood. Even further dismayed upon hearing this strange report, the king quickly made his way toward his wife. He entered the sulking room and saw her there, fallen on the floor in a sorry and unseemly state. Dasarath looked sadly upon his youngest queen, who was dearer to him than his life, but who now held in her heart a wicked and sinful desire. Lying on the ground, she looked like a rose creeper violently torn from its tree, or like an apsara dropped from heaven, or a doe caught in a hunter's snare. Dasarath looked upon her as the lord of elephants might look upon his mate lying pierced by a poisoned arrow. Fondly stroking her tear-streaked face, the agitated emperor spoke to her softly. "Your anger is surely not meant for me, who only wishes for your unending happiness. Tell me, O gentle lady, by whom have you been insulted or rebuked, so that you now lie here rolling in the dust? Who deserves punishment today at my hands? Or do you wish me to release someone who deserves to be punished? By whom have you been offended, or whom would you seek to oblige?" Kaikei said nothing, and did not even look at the king. Dasrath felt tormented as he sought at length to appease her. "If you are ailing, then I shall call here the royal physicians who will quickly heal your pain. Speak out whatever is amiss and allow me to make amends. I can by no means tolerate your distress and will quickly perform any work that pleases you. This earth with all its wealth belongs to me. What shall I bestow upon you today? What can you gain by torturing yourself in this way, my beloved queen? Please rise up and tell me the source of your sorrow." Kaikei was comforted and encouraged by her husband's entreaty. He was ready to do anything to please her. She prepared to put forward her terrible proposal. Seeing Dasrath deeply moved by love for her, Kaikei spoke in strained tones. "I have not been insulted or offended by anyone, O king. There is, however, something I wish you to accomplish. Make me a solemn vow that you will fulfill my desire and that I shall tell you what it is." Dasrath placed her head upon his lap and straightened her disheveled hair. He smiled at her and said, "Save for my son Ram, there is none in this world more dear to me than you. I swear then, by that invincible, high-souled Ram, dearer to me than life, that I shall satisfy your cherished desire. By that very Ram, from whom separation would surely end my life, I swear to carry out your order. Indeed, by Ram, whom I would have in exchange even for my life, my other sons, and the entire earth, I promise to do your bidding. Please, therefore, reveal your mind to me, O good lady." Kaikei saw that her husband had bound himself completely by this thrice-spoken vow. She inwardly rejoiced and felt that her ends were practically achieved. She then said to him, "What would have been difficult to say even for an enemy, and which was like death, arrived at Dasarath's door. Let all the gods, headed by Indra, witness your promise. Let the sun, the moon, the sky, fire, day and night, the four quarters with their presiding deities, the universe itself, and the indwelling Lord in everyone's heart take heed of your great vow. The highly glorious emperor, who is always true to his word and who knows what is right, has given me his promise." Looking intently at her bemused husband, Kaikei said, "Remember now, O king, how in former times you fought with the gods against demons, and how I saved your life. Surely you recall your offer to me, then, of two boons. Having kept those with you all this time, I now wish to take them. Grant me those boons, O Lord, or see me give up my life this very day." Held under the powerful sway of passion and bound by his infallible promise, the king, like a deer stepping into a snare, made ready to accord the two boons to his queen. Kaikei continued, "For my first boon, let my son Bharat be installed as the prince regent in Ram's place. For the second, let Ram be exiled to the forest and remain there for 14 years. Be true to your promise, O King of Kings, and cover both yourself and your race with everlasting glory." For some time, Dasrath gazed at his wife in utter disbelief. He was seized by an agonizing anxiety when he heard her cruel utterance. Surely this could not be happening. Was he really hearing this, or was it a dream? Had something experienced in his former life suddenly returned as a vivid hallucination? Maybe he was simply losing his sanity. How could Kaikei have made such a request? She had always shown a deep affection for Ram. As he considered her words again and again, Dasrath became overpowered by grief and fainted away. Upon regaining consciousness, he saw before him his wife, sitting with a stern expression, and he remembered again her terrible request. As distressed as a deer at the sight of a lion, the king sat upon the bare floor. He sighed like a poisonous serpent transfixed by the mystic spells of a charmer, crying out, "Alas, what a calamity!" He swooned once more. As he again came back to consciousness, the king began to feel furious. This was entirely unexpected from Kaikei. She was revealing a side of her nature he had never seen before. He thundered at his queen as if about to consume her with his blazing wrath. "Oh, cruel and wicked woman, it seems you are set upon the destruction of my race. What harm have Ram and I ever done to you? Why, then, are you bent on bringing ruin to me and mine at such a time? By harboring you all this while, I have held to my bosom a venomous snake. When practically the whole humanity extols Ram's virtues, how shall I forsake him? I might give up my wives, my kingdom, and indeed my life, but I can never part with Ram." Dasarath broke off, too shocked to continue. Had he not always shown kindness to Kaikei? How could she hurt him in this way? Surely she realized that his request would kill him. Deeply impassioned, he spoke with tears in his eyes. "The world may exist without the sun. Crops may grow without water. But in no event can life remain in my body without my seeing Ram. Therefore, give up your sinful desire, O beautiful lady. Placing my head upon your feet, I beseech you to be gracious to me." Dasarath held his wife's feet and gazed into her face, but Kaikei sat looking at him impassively without saying a word. In plaintive tones, the king continued, "If you feel I have slighted your son Bharat, then let him indeed be installed in place of Ram. But what need is there to send away the lotus-eyed and gentle Ram? I cannot believe that you have alone developed a dislike for Ram. On so many previous occasions, you have told me of your love for my beloved son. Surely you are now possessed of an evil spirit." Dasarath could not imagine how else his wife could behave in this way. She had never been harsh toward him before. He remembered the astrological omens. Surely his wife's strange request was the work of some malevolent influence. He spoke more gently. "I have seen myself how Ram serves you, even more than he does your own son Bharat. Have you not always told me so yourself? How then have you come to desire Ram's exile to the dreadful forest for a full 14 years? Let him remain here, and let Bharat be king. What objection could you have to that?" Kaikei did not waver. She had lost her trust in Dasarath, and she seethed with anger. He was simply trying to win her over with empty words. But she was not going to be fooled anymore. She remembered Manthara's warning. The king and his beloved Kaushalya were not going to cheat her this time. She would get her boons no matter what Dasarath said. She sat in silence. Dasarath could not think clearly. He was torn by his love for Ram and his promise to his wife, who had now seized him violently by the heart. Realizing that he could never order his son to enter the forest, Dasarath feared he would bring infamy to his royal line. No king in his line had ever been known to break his word at any time. Dasarath implored his wife, "What will you gain by banishing Ram? He will always render you every service and remain entirely devoted to your welfare. I have never received a single complaint against Ram, even from his subordinates, let alone elders like you. Truthfulness, charity, asceticism, self-control, kindness, non-duplicity, learning, and service to his elders, all these are ever present in Ram. How could you wish harm to that guileless prince?" Dasarath could see that Kaikei was unmoved. It was obvious her feelings toward Ram had changed. The king decided to try a different approach, and he invoked his own love for her. "O Kaikei, you should show mercy on me in this, my great misery. An old and worn man, I am fast approaching the end of my days. I have now been subjected to an unbearable grief in the shape of your harsh words. What do you wish to possess? I can offer you anything that might be had in all this world. Only ask for your desire and consider it done. Joining my palms, I fall at your feet. Do not banish Ram. Accept my piteous plea and save my life. Kaikei looked coldly upon her husband. He had fallen weeping to the floor and was tossing about, gripped by an overwhelming agony. He prayed again and again for deliverance, but Kaikei felt no pity. With her heart hardened by mantra and her intelligence confused by the gods, she was fixed in her evil determination. Looking contemptuously at Dasarath, she spoke fiercely. After granting boons and failing to fulfill them, how will you again proclaim your piety in the world, O noble king? When in an assembly of sages you are asked about your promise, how will you reply? Will you admit that you proved untruthful to your own dear wife, to whom you owe your very life? Having once granted boons and having again sworn three times to fulfill those boons, will you now falsify your word? Kaikei was standing, her face flushed with anger. She felt cheated by her husband. He had promised her anything. Now he was trying to back out. This simply confirmed her doubts about his sincerity. He had no intention of giving her what she wanted. Her voice became cold. What honor will you bring to your line by this action, O King of Kings? Do you not recall the many occasions when your forebears were prepared to sacrifice everything, including their own lives, in order to protect the honor of your race? O foolish king, it seems that at the expense of anything you wish to install Ram as your successor and enjoy life with Kaushalya eternally. Kaikei was furious. The king was prepared to sacrifice anything for the sake of Kaushalya's son, but he cared so little for Kaikei that he would deny her rights, even if it meant bringing infamy upon himself. She went on, her voice rising to a shout. Whether your promise was righteous or otherwise, or whether you made it sincerely or not, it cannot now be withdrawn. If Ram is installed as Prince Regent, I shall swallow poison and give up my life before your eyes. I would prefer death to seeing Kaushalya become the mother of the king. I swear by Bart and my own self that I shall not be appeased by anything less than Ram's exile. The king's body trembled. Consumed by grief, he gazed with unwinking eyes upon the face of his beautiful wife. He was stunned by her words, which struck him with the force of a thunderbolt. He suddenly dropped to the ground like a felled tree, calling out Ram's name. Like when insane, he lost his mental balance and lay motionless on the cold floor for a considerable time. Gradually, gathering his senses about him, the king stood up and spoke in a choked and anguished voice. I cannot believe you are now speaking your own mind. Who has perverted you towards this evil course? As if possessed by some demon, you speak shamelessly, that which should never be spoken. What has inspired in you this great yet groundless fear? Why are you suddenly seeing Ram as your enemy, uttering such cruel words? What do you expect to gain by Bharat's becoming my successor instead of Ram? I expect that Bard, whose virtues compare with those of Ram, will not even reside in Ayodhya without Ram, far less accept the throne. The king had so many times seen Bard serving Ram with love. There was no question that Bard would accept the kingdom, leaving Ram aside. What had made Kaikei imagine this to be possible? Could it be the hand of the gods? But what purpose of theirs would be achieved by denying Ram the rulership of the world? And even if Bharat should be king, why should Ram be exiled for 14 years? It was unthinkable. Dasarath spoke aloud his words. Having said to Ram, go to the forest, how shall I look upon the crestfallen face, which will exactly resemble the eclipsed moon? Surely the kings assembled from every quarter will say, how has this foolish man ruled the world all this while? When asked by wise and learned men about Ram, how shall I say that I sent him away to the forest, being pressed by Kaikei? If I say I was supporting the cause of truth, then what about my declaration that Ram would be installed as my successor? Dasarath fell back onto a couch. His arms were outstretched toward Kaikei, who had again fallen to the floor on hearing her husband's arguments. The king wailed in agony. What reply can I make to Kaushalya when she asks why I rendered her such an unkind act? I have always neglected that godly lady in favor of you. Remembering my acts now gives me great pain. Dasarath's mention of Kaushalya only made Kaikeyi more furious. What a blatant untruth. How did he expect her to believe that she was more favored than Kaushalya? In his desperation, the king was ready to say anything. Kaikeyi stared at her husband, her eyes red with anger. The king continued to speak, his passionate words lost on his implacable queen. Seeing Ram departed for the forest and Sita weeping, I shall lose my life. You may then carry on all the affairs of state along with your son as the undisputed ruler. I have always seen you as my devoted and chaste wife. That was a mistake. Inveigled by your empty inducements, I have long held you close. Now you have finally killed me, even as a hunter kills a deer after enticing it with melodious music. Dasarath saw that Kaikeyi was not to be swayed from her purpose. His anxiety intensified. In his anger and confusion, he began to blame himself. Surely the whole world would condemn him for sacrificing his sinless son for the sake of a sinful woman. This terrible turn of events could only be the result of his own wicked acts in some previous life. He sat with his head in his hands, crying softly as he spoke. I lament only for the sake of those who will suffer for my sake when I perform the evil act of exiling Ram. For having deprived a son like Ram of fatherly affection, all honest men will rightly revile me in the following words. Alas, this old and foolish king, being bound by lust for his favorite queen, could even reject his dearest son. Unable to contain his grief, Dasarath lamented loudly for a long time, censuring Kaikeyi and calling upon her to have compassion on her fellow queens, on Sita, and on the citizens of Ayodhya. He tried in many ways to change her mind. Kaikeyi remained adamant. The king then began to realize the inevitability of Ram's departure. He spoke to his queen in complete dismay. The very moment I ask Ram to depart, he will leave, being fully obedient to my order. I shall then be left, cast into the deepest despair, with my life's breath quickly expiring. Upon reaching heaven, I shall be censured even by the gods for my vicious behavior. You too will earn unending infamy, O lady of wicked resolve. None shall praise you for causing the virtuous and highly popular Ram to be sent into the wilderness. Dasarath practically writhed in pain as he thought of Ram leaving for the forest. That gentle prince was accustomed to ride upon the finest chariots and elephants. How would he roam the forest on foot? Every day Ram was served by numerous royal cooks, competing to offer him every fine dish. How could he subsist on wild fruits and roots? How could his son put on the coarse garments of the forest dwellers, having always been clad in the costliest of robes? The emperor, devastated, shook with grief. He felt his life slipping away. Gazing at Kaikeyi, who he now saw as his mortal enemy, Dasarath said, O wicked woman, it is a wonder that on speaking such cruel and vicious words, your teeth do not shatter into a thousand pieces and fall from your mouth. When Ram goes to the forest, death will surely take me. I will be condemned by all men. Kaushalya and Sumitra will then be cast into abject sorrow and will likely follow me to death's abode. Having inflicted such miseries upon me and being left alone with your son to rule this world, what other indescribable pains will you give to the remaining people who are all so loved by me? Although Dasarath had no intentions of asking Ram to leave, he knew his devoted son would depart immediately upon realizing his father's predicament. The king tried one last desperate plea to Kaikeyi. Even if, upon my failing to exile my son, you are ready to swallow poison, throw yourself into fire, or hang yourself, I shall by no means banish Ram. You have disgraced your family and are intent upon destroying mine. I shall never accede to your ruthless request. O malicious queen, abandon now your evil desire. I fall helpless at your feet. Come to your senses and be gracious to me, who has always been your well-wishing protector. Exhausted by grief, Dasaras sank to the floor like a man gripped by an illness, his hands stretched out to the feet of his queen. The unflinching Kaikeyi, who had given up all affection for her husband, saw that her ends were still not achieved. Convinced by Mantra of the king's ill intentions toward her, with her intelligence further confused by the gods, Kaikeyi could not accept Dasaras' entreaties. In a disdainful and harsh voice, she addressed the fallen monarch. Where now is your honor, O king? Your claim that you adhere to truth is simply an empty boast. Are you to withdraw the boons previously promised to me and further sworn on this very spot? Fulfill my boons as you vowed and protect your far-reaching fame. Dasarath, unconscious, could not reply. After some time, he revived and looked upon his queen's face. From her cold expression, it was obvious that she was not in the least assuaged. The grief-stricken monarch gazed up at the clear night sky. He prayed to Nidra, the night goddess, to stay forever. How could he face the dawn, bringing as it would Ram's departure? Dasaras sat weeping, continuously repeating Ram's name. Kaikeyi spoke impassively. I have only asked you to fulfill your promise to me, O king. Why then do you now lie down dejected? The path of morality has been clearly shown by your ancestors. Proceed upon that path now, O truthful one, and send Ram away. The educated Kaikeyi, knowing her husband to be devoted to religion and piety, invoked the codes of morality. Those men who understand right from wrong declare truthfulness as the highest virtue. I simply urge you to act upon truthfulness alone, O king, and do your duty. Truth is the support of all the worlds. The eternal Vedas represent truth. Virtue itself is rooted in truth, and truth sustains all beings. By following truth, one attains the supreme. Therefore, set your mind on truth, O king, and grant my prayer. Banish Ram to the forest. Kaikeyi stood up amid her strewn ornaments. Her eyes flashed as she made her final demand to the king. Three times you promised, and therefore three times I ask you, fulfill my wish to see my son installed on the throne and send Ram away to the woods. This alone will satisfy me and save me from giving up my life after seeing you abandon your honor. As the unscrupulous Kaikeyi maintained her pressure on him, Dasaras could see no means of escape from his avowed word. With great difficulty he controlled himself, drawing upon his reserves of fortitude. His heart burned with unbearable anguish as he looked through her tear-dimmed eyes. As he looked through tear-dimmed eyes at Kaikeyi. How could he any longer consider her his wife? She was fit to be rejected. Her name should never again be associated with his. No one should call her the Queen of Dasarath. The king spoke fiercely, O perverted woman, here and now do I disown your hand, which I formerly clasped in the presence of the sacred fire and with the utterances of holy mantras. Now the night has passed, and soon the people will joyfully urge me to install Ram. However, as at your insistence, I shall this day surely breathe my last, Ram should be made to offer the last rites to my departed soul. O woman of evil conduct, you should make no offerings to me, for I fully reject you today. Kaikeyi fumed. What use were these empty words? Her husband had already rejected her when he favored Kaushalya. She addressed the king in piercing words. Why do you say such scathing and hurtful things, O monarch? I merely ask that you give me what you have already promised. Summon now your son Ram and give up this needless agonizing. Do your duty and stand fast to virtue. Like a first-class horse lashed with a whip, Dasaras controlled his mind and righteously responded to Kaikeyi's words. Bound with the strong cords of morality, I am helpless. My judgment fails me, and in this evil hour I seek the refuge of Ram. Bring my gentle son before me. The king fainted away, exhausted with grief and his futile efforts to change his wife's mind. Chapter 7. Ram agrees to depart. Towards the end of night, Vasishtha, accompanied by numerous disciples, hastily entered Ayodhya from his hermitage outside the city. He went along the well-swept and watered streets, all thronging with citizens eagerly awaiting Ram's installation. Crossing the outer courtyard of the king's palace, which was decorated all over with rows of flags, he approached Dasarath's inner chambers. The Rishi saw the courtyard crowded with large numbers of Brahmins reciting sacred hymns for the Vedas. Upon reaching the palace gate, he was met by Sumantra, who prostrated himself before the sage and then immediately left to inform Dasarath of his arrival. As he passed through the palace and approached the inner chambers, Sumantra was entirely ignorant of his master's present plight. He composed in his mind pleasing prayers with which to greet the king, who is dearer to him than his own father. The guards informed Sumantra that the king was in Kaikeyi's chambers, and as he arrived at her door, he began to loudly recite those prayers. Even as the sun, which sustains all beings, arouses the world, arises now, O Emperor, like the sun rising from the eastern hills. As Matali, the minister of Indra, extolled his master, who then rose up and conquered the demons, so do I now extol you to rise up and do your duty, O Lord. All of us await you with joined palms. The glorious sage Vasishtha has arrived with other sages and stands ready to perform the sacred installation ceremony of Ram. Order us now and proceed, O mighty monarch. Hearing Sumantra speaking at the door, Dasarath became overwhelmed with sorrow once more. He went to his charioteer and embraced him. The king looked at Sumantra with eyes reddened with grief. Today, O Sumantra, your well-chosen words only pierce my heart with pain. Dasarath's happiness had ended. He could not say anything more and simply stood with tears flowing down his face. Sumantra was unable to fathom the cause of the king's sadness. He stepped back with tightly joined palms. This was strange. Surely, this was the happiest day of Dasarath's life. So long he had desired a successor, at last his desire was about to be fulfilled. Seeing the mystified Sumantra, Kaikeyi said, "The king has remained awake the entire night, considering Ram's installation. Sleeplessness has made him unwell. He wishes now to see his son, therefore bring Ram here." The intelligent minister looked at Dasarath. Something was surely wrong. On such a momentous occasion, why was the king not himself going to fetch Ram? Dasarath saw his minister's confusion. Reassuring him, the king told him to fetch Ram. Sumantra considered then that his master might just be exhausted from the preparations for the installation. Saying, "It shall be done," he bowed low and left for Ram's palace. Meanwhile, the priests were making ready all the items required for the ceremony. Around a beautifully carved and adorned wooden seat were arranged many gold pitchers filled with water from all the sacred rivers, ready to anoint Ram. Above the seat was a large white umbrella, which shone like the full moon on a clear night. Excellent musicians played melodies appropriate to the mood, while Brahmins chanted Vedic texts meant to invoke good fortune. The brilliant sun rose in a clear sky, and everyone eagerly awaited the arrival of the king and his son. Sumantra reached Ram's palace, which was as splendid as Mount Kailash. Secured with oak doors 50 feet tall and embellished with hundreds of balconies, its main facade was adorned with gold images studded with innumerable gems. The outer gateway was constructed of coral worked with gold and embedded with large precious stones of every description. As Sumantra passed through the gateway, he was greeted by delightful music and the aroma of various incenses. Peacocks and cranes crowded the courtyard, which was graced with blossoming trees and bushes. Sumantra descended from his chariot and entered the palace, which was in no way inferior to the palace of Kuvera, the god of riches. Enlivened by simply seeing that palace, Sumatra passed through three entrances, each guarded by powerful young warriors wielding spears and bows. Ram was as dear to him as his own life, and his heart pounded with joy as he approached the inner chambers. The corridors through the palace were cool and delightful, decorated with fine wood carvings and lit by a luster of thousands of celestial gems. Arriving at the gate to Ram's personal quarters, Sumatra asked the doorkeepers there to inform Ram of his arrival. Ram, who was alone with Sita, immediately instructed that Sumatra be shown into his room. Sumatra went before Ram, whom he found seated upon a gold couch, being fanned gently with a whisk by Sita. Richly adorned with costly garments and smeared with crimson sandal paste, Ram seemed to shine like the midday sun. He smiled affectionately at Sumatra, who fell prostrate on the ground, offering prayers. Rising up with folded hands, the minister said, "Most blessed is Kaushalya for having had you as her son. Your father, along with Queen Kaikeyi, now desires to see you. Be pleased to go there without delay." Ram looked at Sita and said, "Surely my father is speaking with his queen about my installation. I think the blessed Kaikeyi, always favorable to my father, must even now be urging the king to make haste with the ceremony, knowing as she does how much the emperor longs for its completion. As he has sent his most trusted messenger to fetch me, the king, along with his most beloved queen, undoubtedly wishes to bless me, that my installation will proceed without impediment." Ram rose to leave, and the dark-eyed and lovely Sita invoked divine blessings upon him. Following her husband to the gate, she said, "After installing you as prince regent, the king should, in course of time, consecrate you as the ruler of the world, even as Brahma installed Indra as the ruler of the gods. I wish to serve you in that state. May the great deities Indra, Yamaraj, Varuna, and Kuvera, the guardians of the four quarters, guard you from every side." Along with Sumatra, Ram went out from his palace quarters as a mighty mountain lion might emerge from his cave. Ram and Lakshman, standing at the first gate, bent low with joined palms. At the middle gate, Ram met his friends and relations, and he greeted them all according to their status, offering obeisances or embracing them. Within the courtyard, Ram mounted upon a golden chariot, which shone like fire and was covered over with white tiger skins and had thousands of small golden bells hanging from its sides. The charioteer spurred on the tall steeds, which were as powerful as young elephants, and the chariot moved away swiftly with a deep rumbling. As the outer gate swung open, Ram's chariot came out from the palace like the moon emerging from behind a cloud. Ram went along the main road, preceded by a platoon of mailed warriors, wearing swords and carrying bows. The prince sat peacefully while Lakshman fanned him. He smiled at the people who thronged the streets in the thousands. His chariot was followed by great elephants resembling great mountains. Thousands of horsemen brought up the rear. Poets and singers chanted Ram's praises to the accompaniment of divine music echoing in the heavens. Mixed with these sounds were the shouts of the warriors, which resembled the roaring of lions. On the balconies and at the windows of the mansions lining the roads stood women who showered Ram on all sides with flowers. The ladies also praised Sita, saying, "Surely that godly lady has performed the highest penances to have been blessed with this great hero Ram as her husband." The citizens, seeing Ram pass by, uttered blessings. "May victory attend you," they cried out. Others were heard to say, "Here goes Ram, who will today inherit the royal fortune. Fortunate, too, are we who will soon be ruled by him." Being extolled everywhere, Ram rode down the highway, which was lined with white houses appearing like clouds, and with shops filled with abundant produce of every variety. The streets were strewn with jewels and with grains of rice and blades of sacred kusha grass. Brahmins made offerings of ghee lamps and incense to Ram as he passed, invoking divine blessings and saying, "We would renounce every worldly happiness simply to see Ram coming out of the palace as Prince Regent today. Indeed, even liberation itself is not so desirable. None could turn away their eyes or mind from Ram as he went along the road in Ayodhya. Everyone looking upon Ram also felt that he was glancing at them. Gradually, Ram and his entourage arrived at Dasarath's palace. Ram passed through the three outer gates on his chariot and then got down and passed through the last two gates on foot. He politely sent back all those persons who had followed him, even though they found it difficult to part from him. At last, Ram reached the inner chambers alone and approached Kaikeyi's rooms. As he entered the rooms, Ram saw that the afflicted king seated with Kaikeyi on a golden couch. He bowed at his father's feet, then laid himself low before Kaikeyi, his mind fully composed. Dasarath appeared dejected and distressed, his face streaked with tears. He sat burning with agony and repeatedly sighing, appearing like an eclipsed sun or like the holy Brahmin who has told a lie. Seeing his son standing before him with a modest demeanor and folded palms, the monarch said only, "Ram," and could not say another word, being overcome by grief. Ram was seized with apprehension to see his father in that unusual state. Like the ocean at the rising of the full moon, Ram became agitated. He was devoted to the king and was saddened to see him so sorrowful. How was it that on such a day his father did not greet him? Even when angry, he would always rise to bless his son. Why was he now remaining seated, looking downward and weeping silently? Ram went before Kaikeyi, who sat at a distance from the king, and addressed her alone. "O godly lady, pray tell me the reason for my father's distress," Ram said gently. "Even though always affectionate to me, why does he not greet me today? Have I unwittingly committed some offense? Is the king angry with me for my having failed in some way to respect him?" Kaikeyi remained silent, and Ram continued, "I hope no suffering caused by illness or mental anguish has afflicted my father. Truly it is said that everlasting happiness cannot be had in this world. I hope I have not offended anyone dear to the king. If I were unable to please my father, or if I failed to do his bidding, and thus angered him, I would not survive even for an hour. What wretched man would not devotedly serve his father, a veritable god to him on earth, to whom he owes his own birth in this world?" Understanding from Kaikeyi's taut expression that there was tension between her and his father, Ram said, "Perhaps my father has been hurt by some utterance of yours, O fair-faced queen, made out of vanity or anger. My dear Kaikeyi, please inform me of the cause of this unprecedented disturbance to the emperor, for I am very curious." Upon hearing this question from the high-minded Ram, Kaikeyi, who had become impudent and was thinking only of her own interests, replied boldly, "The emperor is neither angry nor anguished, O Ram. However, there is something on his mind which he will not disclose for fear of hurting you, his beloved son. Having made a promise to me, the king now repents and wishes to retract his word, just like any other common man. The ever-truthful monarch wants to build a dam across a stream whose waters have already flowed away. Truth is the root of piety. This is known to the righteous. O Ram, take care lest the king loses now his piety for your sake, angry as he is with me." Looking into Ram's apprehensive eyes, Kaikeyi said, "If you will undertake to do whatever the king may ask, be it good or bad for you, then I shall explain everything. I shall speak out the king's promise only as long as it shall not fail because of you, but the king himself will not in any event tell you." Ram was distressed to hear Kaikeyi speaking in this way. Within the hearing of the emperor, he replied to her, "Alas, how shameful it is that I should hear words expressing doubt about my devotion to my father. You should never think this, O glorious lady. At my father's command, I would this very moment leap into blazing fire, swallow a deadly poison or plunge into the depths of the ocean. Therefore, tell me, my dear mother, what is on your mind? By my avowed word, I shall without doubt do whatever is desired by the king. Know that Ram's word is always truth. Seeing the king mute and the guileless Ram prepare to carry out her desire, Kaikeyi felt her purposes all but accomplished. In an unkind voice, she reveals her wicked intentions to Ram. It is well known how I once saved the king's life, and how as a result he granted me a couple of boons. Against these boons, I solicited today a promise from the king to fulfill my desire. I wish for Bharat to be installed in your place, and for you to go to the forest, remaining there for 14 years. O descendant of emperors, prove true to your word and to that of your father. Indeed, rescue the king from the ignominy of impiety and leave without delay. Let Bharat be duly consecrated with all the paraphernalia arranged for you. While he remains here to rule this wide and prosperous earth, you shall remain for 14 years in some distant forest, wearing matted locks and the barks of trees. The king cried out in pain as Kaikeyi spoke. Ram stood without showing any emotion as the queen continued, "Overcome by compassion for you, this monarch cannot even look at your face. O Ram, ornament of your line, make good his promise and deliver from him his difficult and awkward situation." Even though Kaikeyi uttered such cruel words, Ram did not yield to grief. The king, however, felt increasing agony as he thought about his impending separation from Ram. He listened in silence as Ram replied to Kaikeyi, "So be it. To honor my father's promise, I shall put on the dress of an ascetic and depart forthwith for the forest. You need entertain no doubt in this regard, O queen. Why, though, does not my father greet me as before? I could never transgress his order, even as the ocean, by the order of the Supreme Lord, can never transgress its shores." Ram looked across at his father, who could not return his glance. The king kept his head down and wept softly. Ram turned back to Kaikeyi. "Ordered only by you, O Kaikeyi, I would joyfully part with, in favor of Bharat, not only the kingdom, but also all my personal property, my wedded wife Sita, and even my own beloved self. How much more gladly would I part with these things when ordered by my father, the emperor himself, in order to please you and honor his pledge. Please reassure my afflicted father, for seeing him sitting there shedding tears pains me greatly. He may feel assured that I shall immediately enact his desire without feeling any sorrow at all. Let swift horses be sent for Bharat. Without questioning my father's command, I shall now quickly proceed to the forest." The ignoble Kaikeyi then rejoiced at heart. Confident that Ram would soon leave, she urged him to hurry. "Let it be so," she exclaimed. "Messengers may leave immediately to fetch Bharat from his uncle's kingdom. You should not wait a moment, O Ram, lest some impediment presents itself. Keen as you are to depart, leave right now. Do not be concerned for the king's silence, for he is too shy to ask you himself. Let this apprehension be banished from your mind, and make haste. As long as you have not left, the king will take neither food nor water." Drawing a deep sigh with the words, "Alas, how very painful," the king collapsed unconscious on the couch. Ram gently placed his cool hands on his father's forehead and raised him up. The prince was again urged on by Kaikeyi. Turning towards her, Ram said, "I have no desire to live in this world as a slave to material gains. Like the rishis, I am devoted only to righteousness. I will always do whatever is agreeable to my adorable father, even at the cost of my life. The greatest piety lies in serving one's father. Indeed, O gentle lady, greater still is service to the mother, according to the sacred texts. Surely do not see any good points in me, O princess of Kaikeyi, as you felt it necessary to ask such a minor thing of my father. Your request alone would have sufficed. I shall go to a lonely forest and live there for 14 years. Please bear with me only as long as it takes me for me to take leave of my other mothers and to gain the agreement of Sita. try to ensure that Bharat protects the kingdom and serves his aged father, for this is the eternal morality. Unable to speak due to grief, Dasarath wept aloud. Ram bowed low at the feet of his royal father and also before the hard-hearted Kaikeyi. He was moved by acute sorrow, but he kept it within himself, showing no external sign. Joining his palms and circumambulating his father and stepmother, Ram departed. He then made his way towards Kaushalya's rooms. Lakshman, hearing from Ram and the turn of events, followed close behind, his eyes brimming with tears. Reaching the room where the installation was to be performed, Ram respectfully went around the royal seat without casting his eyes upon it. Despite his renouncing the rulership of the world, no change of mood could be perceived in Ram any more than in a perfect yogi who has completely transcended all dualities. Forbidding the use of the royal umbrella which was offered him as he left, as well as the pair of beautiful royal whisks, Ram sent away his ministers, his chariot, and the citizens. The news of Ram's impending exile had spread quickly, and the people were shocked and dismayed. By mastery over his mind and senses, Ram controlled his own agony upon seeing the people's sadness. He exhibited his normal, peaceful demeanor and approached Kaushalya's apartments. He was followed by Lakshman, who, seeing his brother equipoised, was strenuously controlling his own emotions. Ram smiled softly. He was as dear to his relatives as their own lives, and he did not wish to display any feelings which would cause them pain. As he entered Kaushalya's quarters, a loud and pathetic cry came from the ladies. "Alas, here's that Ram who has served all of us exactly as he did his own mother. Today he will leave for the forest. How could the foolish king exile the harmless Ram and thus bring ruin to the world?" Hearing from a distance the piteous wail, Dasarath shrank with shame as he hid his head beneath the silken sheets on his couch. Ram went toward Kaushalya's rooms. He carefully maintained his composure, although he felt agonized at seeing the suffering of his relatives. As he approached the outer entrance of Kaushalya's apartment, he saw many doorkeepers seated and standing there. They quickly flocked around Ram, uttering blessings on the young prince. At the middle entrance, Ram was greeted by elderly Brahmins who were constantly reciting Vedic hymns. Bowing low before them, Ram entered and came to the inner door, where he was led into Kaushalya's chamber by her personal maidservants. Chapter 8. Grief and Fury. Kaushalya had spent the night in undisputed prayer and penance on behalf of her son. She was unaware of his meeting with the king and Kaikeyi. Ram found her seated before the sacrificial fire, surrounded by Brahmins making offerings to Vishnu. She was clad in white silk, and although fatigued by fasting, she still appeared most beautiful. Upon seeing Ram bowing at her feet, she rose up joyfully to embrace and bless him. "May you attain the age and fame of the virtuous royal sages who have gone before you in our line. Sit with me a little and take breakfast. Then go to your father, the ever-truthful monarch, for today he will install you as the prince regent." Kaushalya offered Ram a bejeweled seat next to her, but he merely touched it in respect and said, "Oh, godly lady, surely you do not know that a great calamity has now arrived. What I am going to tell you will cause you unprecedented pain, even as it will my beloved wife Sita. I am about to leave for the forest. Therefore, what need have I of this fine seat? The time has arrived for me to occupy a mat made of forest grasses. Indeed, in accord with a promise already made to my father, I shall inhabit a lonely forest region, living on fruits and roots. How then can I partake of this royal fare you offer? The emperor will install Bharat as prince regent and has exiled me to the forest to live like a hermit for 14 years. Kaushalya once fell down, like a tree severed at its root. Her mind confused, she lay on the floor like a goddess fallen from heaven. Ram quickly lifted her, gently stroking her face with his hand. Kaushalya slowly regained her senses. Struck with agony, she looked at Ram, who was controlling his own grief. She knew beyond doubt that her son could not possibly have spoken falsely, nor was he given to flippancy or jest. His words were certainly true, and they pierced her heart. Clasping Ram's hand in hers, she spoke in a choked voice. For a long time, I suffered the terrible pain of being childless. O beloved son, surely the feeling of being without issue is a grief that consumes a barren woman. Before your birth, every effort your father made to please me was futile. O Raghava, for I longed only for a child. Your birth ended that pain, but now I fear that even greater suffering has arrived. Kaushalya could not bear the thought of separation from Ram. She held him tightly as she spoke. Separation from you will rend my heart in two. That pain will be compounded by the cruel words of a junior wife. What could be more painful for a woman? Unending grief and lamentation has become my lot. Even with you by my side, I have been despised. What then will be my fate when you are gone, O dear child? Surely I shall soon die. Kaushalya thought how she had always been neglected by her husband in favor of Kaikeyi. With Bard enthroned, she would be entirely abandoned. For 27 years she had watched Ram grow to manhood, awaiting the day when she would assume the throne and end her woes. How could she any longer suffer Kaikeyi's scorn? Now Ram, her only solace, was leaving. It seemed her prayers were all in vain. Her fasts and meditations were useless. What was the value of all her self-discipline and sacred observances? Rather than becoming the king, her son was being cast away. Kaushalya condemned herself. Surely my heart is hard like steel, for it does not shatter upon hearing this terrible news. Death will not take one before the proper time, or else I should have certainly gone immediately to the court of Yamaraj, the great lord of death. If by one's own sweet will one could meet with death, then in your absence I would depart this very day. Without you, O Ram, life will be useless. Therefore, like a cow following its calf, I shall definitely go with you to the forest. Wailing in this way, Kaushalya contemplated the calamity about to befall her. Ram was duty-bound to his father and would never oppose his order. He would certainly leave without delay. Unable to bear her suffering, Kaushalya collapsed, sobbing, onto a couch. Lakshman stood nearby, writhing in pain. This situation was intolerable. How could Ram accept it? Why did he not do something? Unable to repress his tumultuous anger, Lakshman spoke furiously to Kaushalya. I also find Ram's imminent departure to be unacceptable, O glorious lady. Ram should never relinquish the royal fortune for any cause. Perverted by the words of a woman, the king has lost his good sense. He is desirous of sensual enjoyments and has been overpowered by lust and senility. What will he not say, urged on by the sinful Kaikeyi? The desire to desire the banishment of the powerful Ram is nothing short of madness. What vice or offense can be found in Ram? There is no man in this world, even if he be Ram's deadly enemy, who could find in him any fault, even in his absence. What man who respects virtue would forsake such a son who is equal to the gods, disciplined and kindly disposed towards even his enemies? What son would heed such a command from a father who has abandoned righteousness? Lakshman's furious voice resounded around the chamber. If the king would not give Ram the kingdom, then it should be taken by force. He would stand by his brother with bow in hand, exhibiting his valor. Let anyone who dared to try to prevent the installation of Ram. He would hold off the entire city of Ayodhya should they oppose Ram. Whoever supported Bharat would find himself slain by Lakshman. This situation called for strong action. Why should they accept it meekly? Lakshman tightly gripped the bow hanging from his shoulder and turned it to his brother. If at Kaikeyi's instigation our father acts like an enemy, then he should be made captive or even killed without compunction. The scriptures make clear that even a father or a preceptor can be rejected if they lose their discrimination, failing to distinguish between right and wrong. On what authority has the king sought to confer the kingdom upon Kaikei's son when it rightfully belongs to you? Breathing hot, heavy sighs, Lakshman turned back to Kausalya and assured her that Ram would be installed as king. He held up his bow. O godly lady, I swear by my bow that I am truly devoted to Ram with the whole of my heart. If Ram enters into blazing fire or retires to the forest, now that I have already done the same, I shall dispel your sorrows by means of my arms, even as the sun dispels the morning mist. Let your royal highness, along with Ram, witness today my valor. I shall kill my aged and wretched father, who, as a result of senility, has entered his second childhood in Kaikeyi's association. Lakshman stood blazing like fire, yet Ram remained calm and composed. Kausalya, weeping, spoke to her son. Having heard your brother Lakshman, who has raised pertinent and proper arguments, consider now what ought to be done. You should not obey the unjust command of Kaikeyi, leaving me here to grieve. Kausalya knew Ram would act only according to moral laws. He would never be swayed by sentiment to deviate from scriptural codes. She called upon Ram as his mother. Dear son, do I not deserve the same obedience as you offer the king? Is service to the mother not an even higher virtue than service to the father? I cannot allow you to leave, nor could I live in your absence. If you leave, I will take a vow to fast until death. You will then be guilty of killing your own mother. And thus ends tonight's reading of the Sri Ramayana, retold by Krishna Dharma Das. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo.
Hari Bo. Hari Hari Bo.
Hari Bo.
Everyone please say Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Everyone please say Ram Ram.
Ram Ram.
Ram Ram.
Gaur Premanande Hari Bo. So we'll continue this reading all the way up until the divine appearance day of Sri Ramachandra. And may this vibration, which has entered your ears, enter your hearts. And as said in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, just by remembering the Lord over and over again, one can eventually reach the shore of the ocean of love for God. Gaur Premanande Vancha kalpatrubhascha krupasandabe evacha patitanam pavanebhyo
vaishnavebhyo
namaha. We'll see you all in the morning. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.